The Around the NFL Podcast. Only deals in mental reps.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room teeming with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Woo!
Hey, now I feel alive again.
Is anybody alive out there? It is almost 5 p.m. in Southern California. The 2017 NFL Draft is mercifully over. And the Around the NFL Podcast, which is driven by Hyundai, is here to talk all about it. How exciting, guys.
Thank you to our Facebook Live and Periscope watchers. And, of course, everyone listening to the podcast as well.
Yeah, I put a 55-45, who I'm more thankful for, but I won't say who's who.
Sit down.
All right, Greg, you're a little punchy. A little punchy with the Kendrick Lamar reference in the middle of the show. We'd like to keep that before the show.
I thought you were going to follow it up. It's one of Dan's best bits of 2017 to just yell out.
Thought it was one of Kendrick Lamar's best.
Sit down, be humble in the middle of any conversation.
Yeah, it is a little bit jarring to people, but then they'll be like, oh, do I need to...
Well,
pull back a little bit.
It probably does force them to ask a primary question. Maybe be more humble, person that heard that from Dan.
Anyway, so the draft is over. 7 rounds in the books and NFL rosters, though not complete, because now begins the process of all the undrafted players and the free agent signings that come immediately once the draft ends. Phones are ringing like crazy still. But now, if you are a follower of an NFL team, you're really now, it's coming into focus what your team will look like when they take the field in September. And we talked about it last time. It's our 4th show of the week. Marron. Let's calm down a little bit here. What offseason?
Got my vote.
Our last show was Thursday night, where we talked all about round 1. So this show will focus on the final 6 rounds and also some kind of big picture takeaways from the week or the 3 days in Philadelphia, which, by the way, I think will be remembered as kind of a game changer, at least, I'm not going to say globally or anything, but internally with the NFL, I think it was a bit of a eureka moment of what this event can be if you really want to test the limits. And it makes sense. It logically, the NFL said that there were 250,000 people that attended this event in downtown Philly. And you're going to see more events like this. Connor Orr, who's going to join us later today.
Ooh.
That's exciting. He boots on the ground for Connor in Philly. He likened it to the NFL's version of Coachella. And, you know, the NFL loves that. And it's hard for the NFL to get good press from certain outlets out there. But when you're getting positive reviews for an event almost universally, the NFL knows they hit on something. So expect this event to continue to get bigger,
well,
not smaller.
Okay. I mean, I would say we'll get into it later. I have some severe issues with the production of day 3 on, on television. But
who else agrees? Mike Mayock agrees.
Absolutely. I think everyone involved does.
Guess where we're going next month?
If we're going back to the zoo, I'm walking off the desk.
Feel free.
I've about had the zoo, okay?
I think we're going
enough.
Back.
Enough. I mean, is this good TV?
I love what he said. I think his honesty was totally refreshing. We'll get into that later. But I will say the energy in Phil, you could see it from the first night through Sunday that the people there loved it. And so we were far away from that. But that is going to continue. No questions asked.
It's outside.
It's outside, baby.
Is it?
Well.
Delivered.
Could have used a little more of the elements in my book.
And we will. Mark, that cost you some sandwiches.
Yes,
because Mark was the only guy rooting for inclement weather for all the hundreds of thousands of people there, and it cost you some meat products. I mean, that it's a double pain for you because it's like when Mike Lombardi tweeted at Wes, pay up to you, essentially.
I don't know why that needed to happen.
A little double trouble there. You got Lombardi, who's on your radar as a failed former Browns executive.
Well,
and he's talking about sandwiches and meat and all that. A lot of
everything
bad news.
Crumbling down at once. Yeah.
Anyway, a great scene in Philly, and everyone seemed to have a good time. But that's not the only thing we're going to talk about. I mean, we're not here to carry the water for the league. I'm just going to come out and say they did a nice job with the event. As someone who was upset when they left Radio City, but now you kind of see if you take the scope at, t- like get the scope bigger, it makes sense. This is the time of year when every fan base is at its highest hope level. Lean into that and see what happens.
Yeah.
That's what happened here. Now, let's talk football. This is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the Browns getting that quarterback and taking themselves out of Scam for Sam. I like that. And,
no.
And, you know, hosing for Rosen, I like to call it. Completely remove themselves.
We're now veering into your fantasy lands. This is not how next season operates.
From the greatest quarterback class since 1983. a controversial pick by the Cincinnati Bengals, who are helping out my boy Andy. The Vikings finding their replacement for Adrian Peterson. A lot. Oh, and by the way, we promised it. And we don't break promises around here. We're going to have a segment later today called 5 Minutes in the Ravens' Nest. Give me another one. Hit me with another one, sir.
That's a sick Raven.
Very bleak.
It's because Ravens fans have complained we haven't talked about them. By doing this, I just realized we encouraged many more fan bases will be asking us to be the next team to get 5 minutes of
That's what the
time.
Block button is for, Greg.
Yeah, it's like coming up next month, inside the Titans' nest. but I think the Ravens fans kind of do deserve, because they have been tweeting at us for a while now, and they're right. We haven't really hit on the Ravens. 5 really good minutes breaking down the Ravens offseason and their draft class. I'm excited. Mark, you're not as much.
I mean, I feel the Ravens fans in general have endured an incredibly successful run. I don't know why they need 5 audio minutes on our show separated from the rest of the league, but we'll do it.
It's a compelling statement by you.
Well, that's an angry Browns fan. There's still Ravens.
He once tried to fold the franchise.
Oh, that's true.
Well, that's still in the works.
That's still in play?
Still in the works.
We'll share some takeaways, and then we'll check in on Go Get My Lunch. But a little teaser for how that went. You need to play my song, Sid. Get your Dan Hanses. This was my redemption.
Yes.
The great Young Monday. The best MC in the game to drop a massive hit and then just walk away. Mm. Kind of like the Lauryn Hill of underground hip-hop is the way I look at it. Greg?
Yeah, never have we had a Go Get My Lunch champion less likely to take his own advice to sit down and be humble.
Oh!
That's not going to happen.
Oh!
Because 2 years ago, I went, I believe, 1-13 in this in this very exercise for the draft season. Even Steven, I'm on the fence now. Mark, I like it up here. You're neither good nor bad. Not going one way or the other.
Credit where credit is due. You did an excellent job. And, you know, it's good that you have a theme song and everything else that comes with it.
All right, let's get into it. And, let's start. Everybody likes to talk quarterbacks. And this was a draft that it does seem to happen every other year. There's the draft that is the – and, Mark, this is not me taking any of the wind out of the sails of your favorite team. But every other year it feels like it's the hope draft for a Browns franchise, where everyone lauds the team and everyone believes that they finally are getting on the right track. But this is one where it felt a little different. And after a big night one where they got 3 first-round picks and got 3 premium players, and we'll see how they work out, the Browns do make their move at number 52 overall in the second round. They select Notre Dame star DeShone Kizer to be not necessarily their immediate quarterback of the now, but it adds, Mark, another arm to the room, and frankly, a room that needed something more than what it had.
They did. I think they're a team that, why not draft a quarterback every single draft? And so they did that. And what the difference here, I think, if you're a Browns fan, is Brady Quinn, Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel, and a list of others were all overdrafted. It was desperation to get back into the first round and grab guys that, you know, history tells us were not anywhere close to where they were drafted in terms of their talent level. What I like about this is they allowed DeShone Kizer to fall right in their laps, and the players they picked above them were appropriately picked where they were selected. So they said we're not desperate to go after a quarterback, and you had to prove that to the fans versus just saying it. And I think they did. I think they got a guy who, you know, opinions are so mixed on this quarterback class, but some say there are issues with him.
But you're pretty high on him.
Well, I'm high on this. I think
you're high on him last night. That's for sure.
Oh, he was high.
Watching what little film I have of these quarterbacks, he has his upside is as high as any quarterback in the class. And there's also the potential pitfalls, and that's from the neck up and everything else. But where they took him, why not? That's all I'd say. And people say, I got killed on Twitter for saying he could easily be the starter in week one. No, it couldn't, impossible. It's like, what's ahead of him? Why not? It's not because he would be on other teams, but in Cleveland, he could be.
I think for the first time in a long time, it feels a little safe to start getting excited that there are possibilities here in Cleveland. A good draft, you get three starters. They could have done that in the first round alone. That's before you get to their second-round quarterback, who many scouts believe is the most physically gifted in the entire draft. So there's four guys who are interesting right off the bat, and that's, you still have third, fourth, fifth-round picks. Who knows what that will be?
I'm trying to find out what is the vast difference between Mitchell Trubisky and him. He could be just as good.
That's the thing. The process was right, not to use the 76ers term. The process of how they got him was right, because none of these quarterbacks were sure things. And think about how much Trubisky cost. He didn't cost the number two pick. He cost the number two pick and three more valuable picks. Deshaun Watson didn't just cost one number one pick. He cost two number one picks. This is why the Patriots were holding out for a lot for Jimmy Garoppolo. He was worth a lot more than just the one number 12 pick. I mean, Pat Mahomes cost that much. Kaiser, we'll see. We don't know now if he's going to be a great quarterback. He's kind of got the big arm and the body and the athleticism that you like him in the AFC North, and you like him with a good quarterback tutor. And he has the edge of having a little less pressure on him for being that late second round pick. The fact that they didn't give up all those picks is what makes him sensible. That's why you pick up all the extra picks, so you can just take some gambles like this instead of having to give up and move up. And I loved it. And I know I didn't love it as much as you. I just want to quote you on one thing, Mark, that you said Deshaun Kaiser is a dystopian icon.
Well, okay.
What does that even mean?
I worked the early shift yesterday, and I don't have NFL.
I can pick out some other choices.
Yeah, I don't have NFL Network in my house, and I'll be happy if you do. But I skirted over to a place called the Irish Times, not too far from my house, and watched this draft. And by the time he was picked, I had a beer or two in me, and I thought, I like it. I'm going to let these guys know about it.
He also said he's perfect for our time. He will lead the Browns to a Super Bowl title.
Well, I did
that
not
nobody
write
can
that, did
support
I?
Morally.
I don't know what I'm talking about at that point. I mean, that's,
I'm going to lean on the listeners, and I know you won't let us down, to come up with some Deshaun Kaiser artwork framed around the type dystopian icon.
I like that phrase. I have no memory of typing it.
Can I? And we got to keep moving, but I will. Again, I want the best for the Browns, Mark, because I love you. My fear with the Jets taking a quarterback in the second round, which they didn't, thankfully, is that with a great quarterback class potentially next year, if you see something from Deshaun Kaiser this season, but nobody's sold, but it's like, oh, he flashed a couple things, and then you talk yourself into sticking with him and sticking this out, and then he doesn't work out because he is a flawed player, according to all estimates or all scouts and everyone that watches his tape. And then you miss out on the class miss out on Jimmy Garoppolo or Kirk Cousins because all of a sudden you have this project on your hands that you're going to give a real good look at, I would assume.
The one thing coming out of this weekend, because I was very concerned about all the rumors swirling around this front office going into the draft, that they would have been the Bears, basically. I thought we were going to come out of this. They could pretend, in another alternate reality, they're the team that sold the farm for a quarterback I don't buy into. I don't think this, if they really loved him this much, you don't wait this long to get him.
Right. They would have taken him with the number 29.
I think they are as open as any team in the league to upgrading the quarterback every single time they have a chance.
And they have five picks, and that's one of the reasons I love this Browns draft. They have five picks in the first two rounds of next year's draft. So they got all these picks, but they're still loaded with premium, we're going to get starters with these picks next year.
Yeah. That's right. You still need a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think they know.
They're under no illusion
that Cody Kessler is going to be enough.
It's bad news for Cody Kessler. And it goes without saying bad news for Brock Osweiler.
It was going to be bad news for Cody Kessler or any quarterback in the league that holds a starting spot in April when you really aren't an NFL starter.
Wasn't Cody Kessler a third round pick last year?
Yeah.
You're essentially giving up on a third round pick, it feels.
No, you're not.
I think they're taking a quarterback every year to get better and better at the position.
I think you don't need to be precious at court. You wouldn't be saying that if you took, four cornerbacks in 2 years. You know, you just keep taking players.
Right.
I would think he's their week one starter. I think Cody Kessler is going to start a lot of games. He showed some promise. He might be a low-level NFL starting quarterback, and that would be a win for them.
Take it from somebody that had four quarterbacks on my team's active roster last year. When you start collecting prospects, it starts to get a little muddled when you're trying to get people reps and you're trying to get people in line.
Well, Dan,
I'd say this.
Don't clump the Browns in with the Jets. The Browns are a class organization.
Speaking of the Browns, you say class organization, yeah. But one man was not happy about the Browns' draft decisions. His name is Gary Bonish. Mm. And I reached out to Gary, and he had this to say about being alerted that he's being released because he got the new hotshot tight end of the first round. Yeah, Gary Barnes is going to make a statement now. Okay, we get it.
We're all in.
I'm not interested in getting an argy-bargy over it. Well, I did hear the news about being cut. I did a nut. The thing that got me most is I found out while watching the telly. I hope a new team signs me within a fortnight. Maybe I'll have a cheeky pint or two tonight and not feel so miffed. Argy bargy, argy bargy, argy bargy.
What?
That was the statement.
I mean,
that's probably the worst British accent I've ever heard.
Well, whatever. I mean, that was his statement.
Guy made nearly $6 million guaranteed.
I don't think they should have cut him, by the way. But you know,
we were saying that downstairs. The timing, why such a rush to do it? But they clearly didn't think he was the guy.
He must not have fit what Hugh Jackson wants in a tight end at all. And they almost thought they were doing him a favor. It is very strange to cut that productive a player now. Why bother?
He'll land on his feet, and maybe even with my New York Jets. We'll see. But I think he'll get a job. But his Twitter feed served as a reminder of what a tough business the NFL is, because immediately after the draft, he tweeted, "Welcome to the tight end room, David Njoku."
Njoku.
Looking forward to getting started. And then his following tweet, about 12 hours later, I want to thank the Cleveland Browns for giving me my opportunity and looking forward to seeing the change. Time for the next step. Tough business.
There will come a time when our Twitter feed has the same, you know, night and day type
of operation. It's strange how different the tone and the vocabulary were in those two tweets than the statement that he gave to you, Dan.
Well, I'm reading it in my...
Right.
Follow along, Greg. I'm reading his tweet, but that was an actual statement from Gary.
Okay.
Piped into the cans.
Got it.
He sounds like he might have been with Sessler at Irish Times last night, the way you were...
I'm just saying some of the lexicon, the British words, they're a little different.
I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. I hit up the only British person I know in this office for some slang words. Argy bargy, which is the most British thing I've ever heard in my life, means to kind of cause a commotion, to make a scene.
Currently, or that's like from the 1800s?
Hey, listen,
or?
That I'm just saying that's what people say when they get... They're over there, over the old ocean.
You need to throw in a little Bob's your uncle, Robert's your father's brother.
I don't get the ref.
It's a British saying.
Oh. See?
And when you finish something, you're like, oh, and Bob's your uncle. There, we're done.
It's Dan awesome. Doesn't like other countries, so.
You know, you always say that. I just happen to love this one, and I got a lot of work to do in this country, including raising two boys and taking care of my wife. So, Greg, while you're gallivanting around the world and ignoring your responsibilities... Born in the USA, right here, and I got work to do.
Ignoring your responsibilities.
Thinly veiled megalomania.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Joe Mixon. You know, he is obviously a very, very talented prospect at running back. First-round talent, in fact, but had a truly ugly assault incident during his college days. And you knew he was going to come off the board. It was just a matter of if it was going to happen in round two or later. And who would pull the trigger? And it turns out the team that pulled the trigger was the Cincinnati Bengals, who selected Mixon number 48 overall in the second round on Friday. So obviously there's a lot of, things to deal with when you factor in the domestic or the violence issue that Mixon was involved with and whether that's somebody you want to get in bed with. But it also, from a pure football standpoint, Wes, very interesting as another sign that the Cincinnati Bengals are intent on fixing their offense this offseason.
Yeah, some people thought he was the best running back in the draft, and this guy was born to play football. No matter what your morals are, what is he going to go be, a banker? I mean, I believe in second chances. He showed remorse. He made peace with the woman. It, to me, like, someone should come up with some creative solutions here. If four teams were only interested, as the report said.
ESPN reported, yeah, Adam Schefter had taken a poll, and he had only found four teams that kept Mixon on their boards.
So you're really doing a favor by giving this guy a chance. I'd like to see someone reach out and say, look, part of your salary is going to go to this charity or this domestic violence place. Why, if you're going to give these guys chances that they wouldn't get in another field, I don't see any problem with dipping into their pocketbook. And then that way you don't have to, you know, all this worrying about PR and we got to take them in this round or that round. Just take some money away from him and put it to a good purpose.
It's a strange moral question because the morals of taking him in X round, like late second round versus right. first round, that's confusing to me. Either you're making a stand or you're not. But it's also a question of, okay, do we believe that someone that commits domestic violence, that pled guilty, should no longer work for the rest of his life? What are the things that, you know, we think he needs to do before he works? I mean, I don't have the answers here. I'm not surprised he got drafted early because watching him, he is incredible. I mean, to me, he's a safer on-field prospect from what I've seen than Fournette. Because he looks like an NFL back, because he can do everything, because he's a power back that can make people miss, has great hands, can be good in the passing game. I've heard people say, oh, this is a good spot. He doesn't have to do too much right away. Give me a break. He's taken this job from Jeremy Hill. Barring anything going wrong, he should be their starter. He's going to be a major factor, I believe, for the Bengals.
Totally agree. And they broadcast for months that they want to change their backfield and upgrade it. And Jeremy Hill, who just a couple years ago seemed like a future star, has very quickly been eclipsed. And there is no question that Joe Mixon will be their week one starter, barring some sort of a setback.
You can do some of the things with him that you can do with Gio Bernard, or you know that they're going to use Christian McCaffrey for. He's that good on passing downs, except he's 225 pounds. And so I think it's a name we should get used to because I think we're going to be talking about him a lot.
We'll get back to Cincinnati a little bit later in the show, but we talked about, so Mixon comes off the board at 48, seven picks before that. The Vikings made their move. They had a huge hole, obviously, in their backfield after deciding to part ways with franchise legend Adrian Peterson. So what do? They trade up seven spots in the second round and take Florida State tailback Dalvin Cook with the 41st overall pick. And Cook is the first running back taken in the top 50 by the Vikes since Adrian Peterson. Do you think, Greg, that this was the right move for the Vikings? It feels like it was.
It was. They traded up. I don't love the idea. They traded up actually with the Bengals, who were in that spot to take Cook. They maybe were a little worried the Bengals were going to take Cook. I don't love giving up extra draft capital for a running back there. I don't think he's as sure a thing as, you know, let's say Mixon or Fournette, and that's why he fell this far. But it's a sign that they knew Latavius Murray was not going to be their guy. They needed more than
that. And it's not at the level of Mixon because we haven't heard anything that bad. But Ian Rapoport reported that Cook, one of the reasons he fell to the second round was because of off-the-field concerns. So, you know, sometimes it's kind of the annoying part of the draft is that this sneaks into whatever round you're talking about, which guys are not. It's not just about football. It's about whether this guy is a good human being and whether you want to be in business with this person. Cook did put up some red flags to other teams.
I just think, and Greg, you mentioned it's a confusing, I don't want to call it hypocrisy, but there's something very confusing about this. We're going to make player X, we're going to punish him by not taking him in the first round, as if that's big enough as a statement as we need to make in the as a team. We don't believe in him enough, but then we'll grab him in the second or third because that tells you that we have some sort of issue with who he is as a person. We'll grab him later, but you're still taking him. Literally, it makes no difference to me at all. And the only teams that took a stand here are the teams that say he's off our board immediately. And I guess it's all but four, but I'm not sure it's all but four.
And it's
all but four didn't take a shot at him.
Yeah, it's easy to say that Mixon wasn't on your board. I mean, Cook, week one, Monday Night Football, Vikings, Saints, Cook starting for the Vikings, possibly Peterson starting for the Saints.
Well,
cooking with gas.
That's Cook's awesome. A better fit for Pat Shermer's offense,
right,
than Peterson or Latavius Murray.
Right, Murray seemed like an odd signing. Didn't pay him a lot, but a guy that's not very good on passing downs in that offense. And now I think he'll ultimately kind of be the 1B in that backfield.
And other running back news. you know, the Saints, speaking of Adrian Peterson, just made a move bringing in the legendary Vikings running back, and they're not done because they go in and make a move in the third round, drafting Tennessee running back Alvin. Help me, somebody.
Kamara.
To me, that one is that one jumps out a little bit to me. Like, they seem to be set in the backfield after getting Peterson, but they decided they wanted to get somebody else back there. Wes, make sense of it to me.
It's hard to. I know they wanted a passing down back. Travaris Cadet is a fringe roster player. He's not somebody you want to lean on as your primary pass catching back. I get that, but and Roto Pat Doherty from Roto World had a really good quote on this yesterday. They talk all the Malcolm Butler talk was about. We need the Brandon Cooks trade too. We need to get our defense better after being embarrassing for a few years.
Right.
Then you go and trade next year's second round pick for a scat back who's going to play limited snaps behind Mark Ingram and Adrian Peterson. I've lost the point where I trust Sean Payton as a team builder.
Or how about Mickey Loomis, who's in a complete flurry dealing with the New Orleans Pelicans while you're in the middle of the NFL draft? How about your priorities straight, please?
Well, Pelicans didn't do too well, so he has some free time right now. Maybe they're getting ready for the NBA draft.
I do love that Mark brings this up literally every
week. It is very annoying to me. What is the crossover between running an NFL team and an NBA team in 2017? How about folk? You're proving that if you alone are not doing a good job with the Saints, get someone in there that's devoted to the football team primarily alone.
I think a lot of people believe Sean Payton is essentially their shadow GM, and he's calling the shots. And I agree with you, Wes. He has burned any trust in terms of building teams. He does know how to take offensive pieces and create some offense. And
that's
so
great. And then the defense is left wanting.
Long term, I've been criticizing them for not thinking long term. And trading a second round pick next year for a third down back is not thinking long term. With that said, Mark Ingram maybe is not going to be on that team that long. Adrian Peterson's not going to be on that team that long. Kamara is a guy who they always play multiple backs, three backs. He's going to be on the field quite a bit.
Fine.
And people love him. Mike Mayock had him ranked 27th overall. So
don't you think every offensive coach would love to have all kinds of new toys to play with? But they have a modicum of self-discipline, and they answer to general managers and presidents who say, no, we have to build a team, not give you a new toy to use three snaps a game.
That's fair, Wes.
That is totally fair, and Saints fans don't like it, but the Saints didn't get what they wanted in this draft. I mean, Reuben Foster came out and said he was on the phone with the Saints when the 49ers called up because they traded ahead to take him. I think the Saints wanted to take Pat Mahomes in the first round, so they didn't get what they wanted. This is the most loaded Saints offense they've had since 2011, maybe 2009. It could really be special. It probably won't be enough to win playoff games, but I do think it's better than it's been, and they could maybe get to the playoffs, score 35 points a game. It is a crazy looking offense.
You're going to need to score 45 points a game because the defense regularly gives up about 42.
Wes, 7-9.
Yeah, 7-9. I mean, I don't buy that it's one of their best offenses. You've still got Kobe Fleener as a big part of it, and you lost Brandon Cooks. Your wide receiver core isn't as good as it was last year.
Real quick update on United Kingdom slang / lexicon. Mark Summers, NFL, one of our listeners,
breaking
says
news right here.
Argy bargy is completely a current term.
This is breaking. Let's break this.
Mark Summers at Mark Summers NFL tells us argy bargy. Absolutely a current term, and it is essentially when you would shove someone at a bar, you know, a scuffle would break, it's an argy-bargy.
Argy-bargy?
Yeah.
I respect such shit so much, so I'm going to go in there and be an argy-bargy.
I think that works. You used that correctly, perhaps.
Congratulations, by the way, to Sashi. I just want to say, despite my misgivings.
Ladies and gentlemen, for one night only, Sashi!
About a potential backfire scenario with Kaiser. Nice job by the Browns.
Very smooth.
I'm happy.
Very smooth guy, too, wouldn't you say?
Sashi?
Yeah.
Extremely
absolutely
smooth. Like Billy D. Williams smooth, is the way I look at it.
Nobody's that smooth.
Well, he's in that world.
The big draft in Philadelphia, as we were talking about at the top of the show, I want to get you guys in touch with the people, what kind of element we're dealing with, the people of Philadelphia. And to do that, we're going to throw it to some archive footage now of Colleen Wolfe, who was on the ground in Philly interviewing a man I'll let him explain his decision. Does the clip set up itself, or do I have to set it up?
Let's see.
All right.
Let's find out.
Shot.
John just got married.
Okay.
And where's your wife?
She is on a flight back from our honeymoon.
So you left your honeymoon to come back to the draft in Philly?
Of course. Why not?
How did that conversation go?
She knows how much I love the birds, so, I mean, it wasn't a conversation. It was, I'm going home for the draft, and you can have fun on the beach in a couple days in Florida.
You can find that guy right now at Patty's Pub somewhere in Philadelphia. He'll be there till 2, 3 in the morning.
You can find, you know, his wife maybe entertaining others.
A lawyer?
Over at that honeymoon.
Speculation.
I don't know.
But it also, there's some logic to it.
I don't profess to know John, but I will say, and Wes, one day you'll learn this as well. I know you're a very headstrong man in all aspects of life. But once the ring goes on, once the ceremony happens, I'm not saying you become, you know, some type of cuck and you don't have any power in your relationship, but the compromise issues, they become stronger, the partnership aspect of it. And this idea of him just saying, oh, I'm leaving the honeymoon, whether you want me to leave or not, you can get away with it now. You're not going to be able to get away with that in 5 years. Put it that way.
Ain't love grand. It does the heart good to know that there's someone for everyone, as this guy proved.
Before we move on, the Patriots only had 4 picks in this draft, by the way. And it was, Greg, no offense, but it was a little refreshing that the last 3 days were about every other team in the league except for the Patriots. And it, cosmically, it makes sense, too. It is the Patriots' world. We all understand. By the fall, it will be once more. But just in this moment of optimism and hope, New England could sit out around. But, of course, that didn't stop Twitter, the Twitterverse, the football cognoscenti, from lauding everything they did. Let's listen to one of the picks and the reaction immediately thereafter.
With the 83rd pick in the 2017 NFL Draft.
Oh, boy.
The New England Patriots select
a dead woman's abandoned wheelchair. Bill's a genius.
Football perfection.
Do you have any more picks?
We do, in fact.
With the 85th pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select
a discarded container that once held an eighth of medical marijuana.
They did it again. Totally unstoppable.
Was that Bill Simmons?
Did it again.
Was that their entire draft?
They had 4 picks, just so you know, a little housekeeping.
Maybe there's some coming up later. They spread these out.
Derek Rivers and Dedrick Weiss, 2 defensive ends, and then they went and got Antonio Garcia and Connor McDermott, 2 tackles.
People really did like the Rivers pick. Youngstown State, Troy. But they,
Penguin.
Well, we're talking, you know, if you're going to throw the Patriots out there. They had a very interesting draft. I mean, if you think about how they used their picks to get Brandon Cooks. It was essentially Brandon Cooks for Ryan Ramczyk was that trade for the number 32 overall pick. So they got Brandon Cooks. They got Dwayne Allen. They got Mike Gillisley. And who am I forgetting? They got Coney Ealy. So they got guys with these draft picks that are more likely to contribute this season, maybe not long term, but to make an instant impact on a roster that's going to be tough to make for some rookies.
Danny kind of squashed your point there a little bit, I think.
Listen, I told you. I'm not saying the Patriots didn't have a great offseason or they're not going to go 14-2 or better next year, but right now it's not their time. And I like that, you know, a lot, everybody's kind of on board with that, and even the Patriots on some level. Very low-key past few days up on the
until
Patriots.
Greg names them one of his winners and his winners and losers.
Which he has. Exactly. It was actually breaking on a mobile alert. Someone tweeted
just
that.
Just the team site, yeah.
Greg listed the Patriots as one of the big winners of the 2017 NFL draft, according to a...
He's taking the macro view.
Throughout the draft process.
All right, the process I get. I think they could have worded it a little better, that's all.
That's fair. Well, this right. Antonio Garcia tackle from Troy, watch out.
All right, you ready? Tackle now talk. It's time. We promised it, and we will deliver. It's time to go 5 minutes in the Raven's nest.
How many podcast listeners are just pressing fast forward? Don't do it. This is going to be good.
It's like the hockey segment of a highlight show.
Oh. Listen, we're promising that the we're
good
promising. I got your NFL NHL reference. I like those. We're promising 5 minutes to the Ravens. We're not going to say it's going to be in praise of the Ravens because I'll start and say that I don't know what the Ravens are doing with this draft class.
What?
I did some research. I'm being honest.
All right. Talk
to us. Why did you give them 5 minutes?
Let's talk to us.
Just to publicly scold them.
I just want to be honest with you. Like, what is the most underwhelming aspect of that team right now?
The secondary was going into the season. They've improved it pretty dramatically.
I think you would say wide receiver potentially.
I'd say their offense in general. Okay. They had a top 10 defense last year, but they're lacking playmakers. They've lost a host of players, including Steve Smith, two offensive linemen. And you don't want to ever doubt Ozzie Newsome, of course, but what do? The first 2 days of the draft, they take zero offensive players. They stick on the defensive side of the ball. And then doing a little more research, the rest of the draft, they finally take a couple guards in round 4 and 5, and that's good. You want to fortify that line for Flacco, who's getting older now. And then they take a DB in round 6, no pick in round 7. So they don't take any skill players on offense. And let's be honest, how if you're a Ravens fan and you lost out on Brandon Marshall, you lost out on, there was another player that they were hot on, a veteran in free agency. They didn't get any.
They wanted to bring Torrey Smith back.
Pierre Garçon, right. They were hot for. They didn't get him. So now you're going into the spring without any big playmakers in your draft, without any big scores in free agency. How are they scoring more than 20 points a game?
I think that's a fair criticism. Their running back position and their tight end position are underwhelming. They have players there, but they don't have plus exciting players. With that said, they had a lot of holes on defense. I know they had good numbers last year, but they lost people, and it doesn't surprise me that they needed to fill some of those roles. People like Tyus Bowser a lot, who is their second-round pick. Chris Wormsley, people thought, was a good value in the third round. I don't know about Ozzie Newsome, though, and the Alabama thing. It's like every time he's on the clock, everyone knows he's just going to take the best Alabama player available. He took Marlon Humphrey in the first round at cornerback. They have really improved their secondary this offseason. I think it's gone from ugly to it looks pretty good on paper. Weddle and Tony Jefferson, and they've got some numbers at cornerback. And then they take another Alabama guy, Tim Williams, in the third round.
Well, they were already one of the best defenses in football last year. For stretches of the season, they were the most impressive defense I saw. Dan's right. They ignored what their offseason tells us is they are counting on Breshad Perriman to become what they thought he was when they drafted him in the first round 2 years ago or 3 years ago, however long it was. He has been injured and unproductive and unreliable. They need him to emerge as a true number one receiver if this offense is going to do anything next year.
That's what John Harbaugh said when he was asked about this, that we feel we've addressed wide receiver in previous drafts, but we haven't seen the production from those players. And so you're hoping on that. There was another thing
about sign someone else.
They will.
Maybe it'll be Anquan Boldin because they need one more.
They absolutely do. If you look at their wide receiver lineup, it's just completely the opposite of formidable. There was stuff coming out of Baltimore where their goal is to build, not that any team wouldn't want this, but to focus on this, a Dallas Cowboys-like offensive line. That was their number one kind of pursuit. But then you wait, as long as you do, to take linemen in a class that does not have a particularly strong group of linemen. So you're waiting to do that. You're waiting to add the wide receiver talent. The running backs worked to some degree last year, but you could have gone and gotten a completely different type of identity-changing back for your offense. You didn't do that.
Well, they stopped running the ball because they didn't trust their offensive line to open holes. Hmm. And they did pick up a couple of interesting guards.
One minute.
What was that, Sid?
1 minute.
Thank you. Here were the big additions, by the way, in their offense this offseason so far. Running back Danny Woodhead.
Good pickup.
He basically just
replaces Kyle Juszczyk as the third down back.
Okay, but durability issues. He's getting older.
Absolutely.
Now, Danny Woodhead.
Yep.
And backup quarterback Ryan Mallett. The only two offensive additions so far.
That's
and they don't take
him back.
Anybody else other than linemen in the draft. So that's,
I could give
that's
you
a
final 10, 15 seconds on the Ravens.
Give it to us.
Your origin is one of thievery.
Oh,
you stole your team out of Cleveland, and now you're asking for good things. You've been given 2 Super Bowls. That's more than enough.
I think they earned it.
If it is time for you to suffer, it may be time for that to happen for a long period of time. How about you flip fortunes with someone else in the division, the team whose heart you ripped out of the city?
This is a fair closing argument by you. I buy it.
I am tired of this organization succeeding.
And Ravens fans, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. By the way, 4th-round pick Nico Siragusa, last note. Of course, there's a famous Siragusa in Ravens history. No relation. Buzzer. Let's exit the Ravens nest.
It was fun.
That was good. Give me a call.
Glad to get out of there.
We did it. I try to be respectful about it, Mark. You took it in a different direction, but I understand.
Have they been respectful of my life?
who's they? I mean, Art Modell, rest in peace. I mean, he wasn't respectful. But now the current regime?
How about the 23-year-old Ravens fan we met in a bar during the NBA playoffs who had no idea that they were the Browns previously?
I was once in an airport with Mark as he stopped several strangers on the way to the gate to ask how they felt about the Ravens stealing his Cleveland Browns franchise.
Yeah, that
2 decades later.
Well, you know, you can't just ignore history because it happened before you were a child or an adult.
One middle-aged lady had a really strong opinion on it.
That checks out because I believe later that day it was really a banner plane ride for Mark Sessler to the West Coast.
Oh, I'm alone on that one. Okay.
We struggle to get shadowy league figures to pay attention to our show. Sometimes they pay attention. They paid attention after that flight that you guys took.
Well, yeah, we got called to the carpet.
Good to bring that back up.
All right, so before we head towards checking in on Go Government Lunch and getting Connor on the horn, how about some final kind of takeaways either from the last six rounds or from the draft overall? We'll start with you, Greg Rosenthal.
Well, see, I stepped on my my Patriots bit here. Let's start with someone else while I'm thinking.
Okay, Chris Wessling.
I would say the draft for me was an extension of the idea I already had that I liked what the Colts, Panthers, and Buccaneers were doing with their off seasons. The Panthers picked up some defensive additions in free agency. They look strong on that side of the ball, and then they go get what they needed on offense, speed and playmaking ability, and they've bolstered their offensive line too. But I really like the Christian McCaffrey and Samuel Joseph picks to get that speed and playmaking ability they desperately needed. The Colts defense, that had to be fixed, and they have put so many resources into it this year. The first three picks are defense, and then they get Marlon Mack, who looks like he has a chance to be – Bucky Brooks was calling him this year's Jordan Howard.
Wow. Could be a and in a great spot for it with Gore
right.
to pass him.
And then the Buccaneers, you know, love the DeSean Jackson pickup. They get O.J. Howard, the best tight end in the draft, maybe the best tight end in the last few drafts. And then they get the receiver out of Penn with the third-round pick who can already compete for playing time in the slot, and maybe he becomes an outside receiver down the line. But I really like what those three teams have done to become kind of borderline playoff teams to maybe propelling themselves into the postseason.
And to throw another name just sort of in that rising team mix, I think the Titans, who you mentioned on Thursday night, also did the same in terms of adding playmakers. It was like, okay, we've got our meat and potatoes team. Now let's get some guys who can make big plays. And Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, who have already proven, I think, that they're solid NFL starters, have to be loving this offseason. Godwin, who you mentioned, who the Bucs drafted in the third round, one of Matt Harmon's very favorites, thought he was the most underrated player or receiver in this whole draft, according to Reception Perception. And you start thinking about how many different options that Jameis Winston has to throw to now, it's overwhelming. And the Titans also followed up their first-round wide receiver pick with another pass catcher in the third round. And so these are guys who I think are going to play, and Taylor's a big playmaker, who are going to play right away. I think they changed how their offenses are going to look in the draft.
I watched some Corey Davis tape, and I can't believe after watching the tape that he was not far and away the consensus number one wide receiver in this class.
And you're talking about teams that found their quarterbacks. And it's not that it's easier to build a team just because you have a quarterback, but it really is in many ways.
It's so much easier.
You have that major piece in place, and you can start to build strength on strength around them. And my point would be, I know we hit on this the other night a little bit, but when you did your pain rankings, for instance, Dan,
yes,
I think it's back then it's fair to have ignored someone like the Chicago Bears and that fan base because they've been in the mix here and there. They've won a Super Bowl that we can remember, one of the more famous teams of all time, the 85 Bears. 3 decades have passed now, plus, where they have done nothing, come nowhere close to getting back to that level of glory. The team building scenario in Chicago is the absolute opposite from what we can see of what you guys have mentioned. You had a franchise quarterback, was not a great one, but you didn't parlay that into another one. You simply have no quarterback now. You've got nothing. You reached massively for a quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky that really doesn't seem to be any different than guys that were picked 6-7 slots later in that position. Bears fans, to me, I think have been underrated for the pain they've gone through, and I think the level of hopelessness starts with ownership. This is not a plugged-in franchise that cares about turning the Bears around. I think they're coasting right now on the fact that the Cubs, for instance, have succeeded. They have put forward a completely confusing offseason. I don't think you can look at the head coach and say, this is the guy that other franchises have brought in to turn around. He gets you to a certain point. He's not even gotten them to that certain point. This has been a weekend of absolute despair, confusion, and unrest for the Bears fan base. We have them in our office. They have never seen them at this level because I think it finally came to a head. Nothing makes sense in Chicago right now.
Their strategy is absolutely up for debate, or you could absolutely criticize them for the way they've went about things. I think even three of their draft picks were not highly recruited players in the back end of this draft, even beyond the Trubisky move. But in terms of like taking ownership to task for not trying and all that, I mean, they're trying. They've identified Trubisky as a starter. And I'm going to, again, reiterate what I said Thursday. Let's see if he can play.
It'd be nice if
write him off.
Bears fans have written him off. I mean, they put him on.
But who cares? That's what
fans do. But they put him on the Jumbotron at the Bulls game while the Celtics are drilling them the other night. And they boo the poor kid. This is what they do with their new quarterback. They booed Mike Glennon at a Cubs game. They booed Trubisky. I mean, give the poor
kid. They don't trust leadership.
They do not trust
leadership. Don't boo the number two pick of the draft already.
But
come on, Bears.
I agree with your overarching point, Mark.
It's not his fault.
You're right. It's not his fault.
Booing's overrated.
And when we get around, I have a second takeaway to address what you just said, which I do agree with what you said on some level.
Okay. Because Glennon got booed at Wrigley Field a couple weeks ago. I think Bears fans are they're frustrated because, and you know, I'm not going to go crazy feeling bad. Sorry for Bears fans. Like, as a Jet fan who's never seen a Super Bowl yet, they at least got the Super Bowl about 10 years ago, and their dads and brothers got to enjoy 85. But it has been pretty barren. I get that. I understand. Let's see.
They got a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman as their starting quarterback.
I mean, they were just basically fodder to be destroyed in that game. Please, we know that.
Booing is one of the most futile actions a human being can engage in.
By the way, is there any relation between Chris Wessling and Mitch Trubisky? A lot of people are pointing this out, and I see the physical resemblance.
He does look like I looked at about age 19 or 20.
Does it make you like him a little bit more?
Not really.
Does that speak to just your feelings about him as a prospect or about
Chris
the way you
I don't really
about
care how quarterbacks look or football players. Like, either you can play or you can't.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah.
But
I don't care.
If it's actually you.
I mean, I would have to put myself outside.
Yeah, you got to be kidding me. I mean, if there was a quarterback that looked like me, I almost bought a Sage Rosenfels, you know, jersey. You get a little Jew out there playing quarterback, forget it. I'm the biggest fan of him in the league.
I mean, you don't think Marcus Grant is really carrying the torch for Geno Smith, do you?
No, probably not.
Too soon.
And that's why I'm a big fan of Jimmy Garoppolo, because obviously Jimmy are very similar looking. Franco Harris looks like Sheck, too. That was another takeaway.
Well, I mean, slow down with that. I don't totally agree with
that. Oh, I think they look a lot alike.
I've not seen it, but...
I just want to share a quick takeaway about the Giants, since I did address this a little bit on Thursday, that I thought that Eli had a nice Thursday night where they didn't take a quarterback. But then the Giants did take a quarterback in round three, Davis Webb, and, you know, he could just be a guy that sits forever and ever. Maybe he's not, but the third round is pretty good real estate for a quarterback. But then what got on my radar about the Giants is that we know that they have the skill players, but if you really want to take care of your aging quarterback, address that offensive line. And they don't take a single lineman to the last pick.
They got Bisnawati.
They got Adam Bisnawati at the 200th pick overall.
Not a fan of Bisnawati.
And I don't know if this guy could play, this Adam Bisnawati, but address it a little higher up, maybe the position. If Eli's not going to have time to throw, you know, you could get on him all you want, but they don't have the protection. It doesn't matter how many weapons you have. Don't like what the Giants did there.
Jerry Reese, rather, doubling down on Eric Flowers, who was his number 9 overall pick, and has really hurt that franchise and will continue to, because they're really showing faith by keeping him as a left tackle. Whereas the Bills, who I think might take a quarterback early, they didn't take one until I think it was the 5th round with Peterman, but they did try to help out Tyrod Taylor, not just with a receiver, which they desperately needed, but with a couple offensive linemen. So even though they're saying Tyrod Taylor has to earn the starting job, I think he had a better weekend than Eli Manning because they got him some help.
Another takeaway, I like that Drew Pearson, speaking about the Philadelphia dynamic, on Friday night took on 70,000 drunk Philadelphians.
He did a good job.
Let's listen in on that.
Five defensive back from Colorado, Chidobe Awuzie.
Listen to that crowd.
I mean, he is lucky he was not, he was up there for a while, taken out by an assassin's bullet. I mean, that was a rowdy city crowd.
I mean, he started it by saying thank you for my great career or whatever. I mean, that was the ultimate troll move to start. It was awesome.
He did a nice job with it. By the way, guys,
I have a takeaway. How about the Arizona Cardinals? I think, I don't know if they wanted a quarterback or not, but I've been in on this. They're kind of all in on this one last chance, and I don't think there's, I think there's a chance they could make a playoff run still, and I think they ended up having a great draft early, taking positions. Hassan Reddick fell. There was 9 skill position players taken in the top 12, so they really got their pick of the litter at defense, and that's a position they needed at linebacker after losing one in free agency. Then you get a safety, Buda Baker, who kind of replaces Tony Jefferson, so they kind of got win now type of players
all
early,
or nothing.
And I think that's good because they've been a franchise who has taken these projects early in draft, and they can't deal with projects right now. Fitzgerald's going to retire. Palmer's going to retire. Who knows about Arians? Like, get some players to win now.
All of that is true, and they could still be undone by their offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are doubling back to Cincinnati real quick. John Ross, they took Mixon, and they've effectively now fixed that offense for Andy Dalton and give him a shot. I don't know if Cincinnati, their window might have closed when he broke his thumb, but I thought they had a nice draft.
Another team could be completely undone by the offensive line, which was bad last year and got worse with the exodus and free agency of several key players.
Took one lineman in the draft, 5th round, J.J. Dielman.
It was a terrible draft for linemen, everyone told us, and teams actually listened to that. They didn't really move up and take guys. They thought it was a terrible draft for linemen, and they didn't take them.
I have a takeaway, and it's about how the draft is covered in general. And if I had one wish, if I were ever still doing this 20 years from now, I would like to see the coverage of the draft completely evolve and change, because it is utterly absurd. And even what I just said about the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky and what everyone has said about Mitchell Trubisky and all these people, that we literally have no idea how these guys are going to work out as pros. We don't. That we rush into all this clickbait column action where it's winners, losers. This guy is going to show like drastic production in year one. It's utter wind. And we aren't able to say, we can't, you say this thing, sit down, be humble. How about take a step back and don't put these articles and this kind of over-exacerbated nonsense out there when we have no idea. You look at drafts from 3 years ago. It is unbelievable how many on Pro Football Reference, how many players are no longer bold because they're not even in the league.
Writers around the country, you can all do your small part by refusing to write your editor's draft grades article.
I think in the 1980s, when you're a kid, you kind of fall for that.
I totally agree.
We can move beyond it.
I totally agree with the draft, and yet it's a slippery slope, because if you really look at what we do in general, that's our jobs in general. Like when we talk on Sundays and we project forward, like we're doing that based on stuff. But we don't know, and most of it's wrong, or a lot of it's wrong.
The difference is that now fans and anyone who is interested can watch tape of these college players just like analysts could back. They alone had that right in the 70s and 80s. Everyone has it now. And so why does this one group of people decide whether it's an A, B, C, or D? I'm just saying there's a lot you can do in our profession to be valuable. I don't think it's happening with post-draft grades that happen on Sunday night and Monday morning after the thing wraps.
But the last 54 minutes of our podcast, we made some things that are essentially right.
I know, but I find a tension in it because I don't feel that way when we talk about games we just saw in week two where people, you're doing a service by they could watch one game or none. Mm-hmm. We all got together to watch them and we're telling them what we say. The draft to me feels the one area where the lead up to it and the reaction to it is slightly absurd.
I thought you were going to talk about the orangutan and everything.
Don't even get me started on that business.
Elevate your underwear game to the next level.
Oh, yeah.
With MeUndies. You know what it is. What is MeUndies? You know what it is. Oh, just seriously soft feel-good undies delivered right to your door. MeUndies are designed in L.A. and made from sustainably sourced micromodal.
Modal.
A fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft lugs undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. So Mark did.
That's right.
Got a corked bat.
Not wearing one. Not sure what that means. I'm not wearing one at the moment. I'm not wearing a pair at the moment.
Wearing anything?
I am wearing a different type of underwear. Only because I only have two, and I'm going to sign up for that subscription.
And guess what? You can save time and pay attention to this part, Mark.
Use our promo code.
You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/NFL2017, and get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. And once again, that's MeUndies.com/NFL2017, MeUndies.com/NFL2017. Sid, where are we on the official statement from the Shadowy League figure about why our offer code, we're reading this freaking copy every show, where is the individualized offer code to show how loyal and faithful our listeners are?
The Shadowy League figures have been unavailable for comment as they are in
Stunner,
Philadelphia, and, you know, they're doing important things in
they're
Philadelphia.
They're running.
Please.
They don't want the truth.
I'm not holding my breath for a satisfactory explanation for why we've been completely blackballed.
Yeah, if any of those Shadowy League figures are listening to this podcast on the flight back, to the West Coast, no off days. Let's get on it.
Right, and by the way, you're flying back into a hornet's nest.
Anyway, let's move on. We'll check in on Go Get My Lunch. Oh, what a glorious day today is. And I'll take it twice. Turn it up in your headphones, everybody.
Dan's like, I'll take it twice. It cut to 30 seconds before on instant message. Play the song, Sydney. Play the song or else.
I get it. You're in a bad mood, Greg, and you should be because you did very poorly
in
this round of Go Get My Lunch. In fact, you lost first place overall in the standings today.
And we're going to get into that. That's
you know
too
that
bad.
Hurts.
But I did fine.
You're not sleeping.
You know,
stop stepping on. Listen, just because you're in a bad mood, let's go through it, Greg.
People on the edge of their
seats. And don't look at my screen. Driving me crazy. Chris Wesseling will start with finished 8-5. Nice job, Wes. We talked about how this was a big round for you, and you do what champions do. You step up and you deliver with a nice round.
It could have been a much better round if the Bengals would have just stayed with their pick and taken Joe Mixon at 41.
Mm. Yeah. So you went 8-5. This was your first prop. If the 49ers pick number two, they will not draft an offensive player. Greg and Mark took you up on it, but the Niners traded out of that pick, the windfall that they received.
It's kind of weak.
That hurt you.
That is a void, no winner there.
I mean, they went to number three. It's not like they dropped all the way down to 12.
You could have had some sandwiches
and
there.
They took a defensive player, correct?
That was a weak job by the Go Get My Lunch rollers.
What are you trying to say?
You got to be careful with the language.
The language is so important with this.
You went out of your way to say that they wouldn't trade out. I mean, that if they traded out, it wouldn't count.
I mean, but the spirit of the statement was if they trade all the way down to number 12 or something, all bets are off.
Spirit.
But if the Bears want to overpay prodigiously just to move up one spot, I mean.
After your little scam with the Brock Osweiler prop last year.
Do you know how many people I blocked? Do you know how many people I blocked for absolutely refusing to use common sense on that issue?
This is, you know what? This is this ruling, which I agree. Sandwiches don't lie. It's like when you miss a foul shot after a foul that you didn't deserve.
I accept it, but I know in my heart that I had the right call there.
The first quarterback drafted was number two, obviously, Trubisky. None of us got it. Wes had predicted number five. Christian McCaffrey won't be drafted by the Panthers. Only Mark.
It was a bad job by me and Dan for not taking you.
I was going with.
Only Mark got a sandwich there.
I was going with the Greg Rosenthal principle that you always take the field.
Yeah, and I did, and it didn't work out for me there. Could have gotten one from you. Nice
and the reason mark. I didn't take it is because I had that same prop. I wanted to stay true. Joe Mixon gets drafted before Dalvin Cook. And that cost you three. It was a good logic to it, but it didn't work out. Dan, Greg, and Mark all got sandwiched.
And it was very close. I mean, it came down to the Vikings having to trade up into the Bengals spot to get ahead of them. So good sandwich drama, if nothing else was.
Yeah, the next up, Mark Sessler, who had a round that was very reminiscent. What was the Browns season, Mark, when they won on Thursday Night Football against Cincinnati and then just collapsed? Was that 2014?
Yes, it was.
All right, that's what Sessler's draft was. He started 3-0 on Thursday, flying high, finished 4-10.
At that point, he's Brian Hoyer, and it's week 11.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
The tumble was fierce.
4-10. You had number 5 overall for the quarterback as well. You had Joe Mixon is drafted by pick 45.
Well, 35.
35, and I believe he went 48.
He wouldn't have been picked in these spots apparently, but the Packers and the Browns were sitting there at one point in those spots, and then they weren't, and suddenly teams that would not have wanted Joe Mixon jumped in.
You had it rains during draft hours, and you and our friend the weatherman in Oklahoma both wrong on this one. 3 more sandwiches.
I'll say I had fun with that one because there was like, it wasn't you find out right away, you lose. There was always hope until suddenly, you know, as this ridiculously long third day came within 8
It added tension. It added some excitement.
Two notes there. We heard from Shaq and Colleen, it rained last night, but not during draft hours. And also at one point where we just happen to be talking about this at some point during the third day, we look over and there's rain or what appears to be rain pouring down on some children in the sidewalk, but they had just opened up a fire hydrant.
Oh, my heart jumped. I thought,
like 1951 Brooklyn stoop.
Right.
Who do people do that anymore? Open up the fire hydrants.
No, you're allowed to.
Seems wasteful.
Oh, yeah. We did that happen in New York sometimes.
And here's another one where you kind of put yourself out there and got banged. A team misses a pick. 3 more sandwiches.
Well, I thought that might be tied into weather chaos, and none of that happened. But, you know,
you were really riding.
I am a showman, and I care about, you know, entertainment over food, and I got absolutely killed here.
So you always put everything above food, and this time it got you.
Well, I'm not putting it above food for the three of you.
Greg Rosenthal, 6-8. Reuben Foster gets drafted in the top 15. Dan and Wes made sandwiches there. When did he go?
31, so that was not even close.
Yeah, the first quarterback, number 10 overall, incorrect. John Ross.
You get the second quarterback at number 10.
John Ross. Sorry,
that gets you nothing.
This one is the one that really stuck in Greg's craw, which is why I really loved it. John Ross will be drafted ahead of Mike Williams. Cost you 3 sandwiches. Ouch.
Well,
loved it.
You know, you got to trust the process long term, like Sashi Brown. Sometimes things don't work out, but you made a sensible call. He got taken in the top 10. It just wasn't good enough. I thought he'd get taken early.
I like the Cleveland's GM is now being referenced as, you know, a picture of patience and planning.
Cut to after this went against Greg, cut to the living room of his home in Santa Monica. He's sitting on the couch, no blinking, staring at a television screen that just has fuzz for like 4 straight hours. Just destroyed, gutted. Audgy-bodgy with yourself after that one. The Saints or Cardinals will draft a quarterback in round 1.
Ouch.
Oh.
Cost
good bet
more.
Too.
Mark,
again, I like the process. I think the reporting's out there that they were going to take Mahomes and the Chiefs jumped up and got him. So I lost.
It looks like, Mark, again, by the way, that going against what was your new policy of just getting involved more, it cost you at least 2 sandwiches.
This was an absolute disaster on all fronts.
Right. That's the whole thing. See, 6-8. I just got in on the rest, and at least I got it back to close to 500.
Big part of the game. In fact, I was the only one that got anything right in terms of predictions. That's why I ended up 11-2. Marron, the old Zeuser. The first QB I had at number 6. That was wrong. The Browns and Texans drafted a QB in the first round. Just missed that one. The Browns took one in the second round. The Texans obviously took one in the first round. Greg and Wes. I say just missed because...
I mean, the Browns took 3 players in the first round and none of them were at quarterback.
But I think I think Trubisky would have been a Brown if the Bears didn't go nuts.
Well, and I would have no longer been part of this company if that happened. So.
But that cost me 2 sandwiches there. I lost there. But then things turn around. I had the J.J. Watt one, of course, where he posted a picture from his draft with his younger brother, TJ. No one took me on that, though, so I didn't make any sandwiches. And then Jets draft a defensive player in the first round, which they did, and the safety, Jamal Adams, and do not draft a quarterback with their first 3 picks. In fact, they didn't take any quarterbacks at all, as they are firmly on the road to scam for Sam.
That was a good job by you and a bad job by us.
Yeah.
Because it made all kinds of logic, but we all got caught up in the you've got too many moving parts theory.
Also a bad
Very
job.
Very rarely it works.
Hey, how about a bad job? Mike Maccagnan for drafting Christian Hackenberg in the second round and then having so much faith you don't draft a rookie the next year. Way to double down on your big-time mistake. Maybe he's not going to be there next year to make that draft pick when they go 2-14.
Hey, Mr. Know-It-All over here. Never even seen Christian throw a pass in the game.
The Jets are going to keep it that way. They don't want him out there.
And then Sydney, of course.
Of course, you don't like to see the.
We know. We talked about this already. 0-4, so four sandwiches. And just the final, because, Mark, one of your source of consternation for you was who actually owes what at the end of the day.
Oh. It makes no sense. Now it does.
Wes is okay. He owes me one sandwich. That's it. Mark owes Wes one sandwich. Mark owes Greg two sandwiches. Owes the old Zeuser four.
So weak.
I have two children at home that essentially will not be eating until late June.
So you lost seven sandwiches in this round.
Is Daddy ever coming back?
He might come back with no money in his wallet. I'll tell you that.
Useless.
Not putting bread on the table.
Greg owes Wes two sandwiches, and this is the sweet one, owes the old Zeuser Danny Boy three. And then Sydney owes each of us one.
By the way, I'm bringing you your four sandwiches at once.
Yeah, so just to punish you.
And you can do what you want with them.
Sydney.
It's like in Willy Wonka, the one with Gene Wilder, where they just keep feeding her the candy and she floats away and explodes.
Better be hungry that day.
Sydney, this is your first time playing Go Get My Lunch. You didn't even make it to the draft, really, before having lost those four sandwiches. Your mom is here still, right?
Yeah.
In Mama the background. Carlson. I'm sure she's
like. Do you feel like you've brought shame upon your family?
I have, but not more so. This is actually my second time playing Go Get My Lunch because the first time I thought that Ziggy Ansah was gonna have a big.
Oh, that's right.
And he's a BYU guy, so that was like double shame on my house and my family.
And undoubtedly, your mom, who's here on a vacation to see you, this is what she wants to be doing with her time in California, sitting in a stuffy 8x8 foot studio, listening to us
on a Saturday
evening.
Yeah,
this is my birthday present to her.
So does that? I guess that makes you 0-8 lifetime. We're entering infamy territory.
Yep. Also, I have one out there for Johnny Manziel to sign with the team.
Oh, no.
He doesn't have to stick with the team.
What team?
Any team. In this league. Oh, I mean, goodness. Yes. I believe that it did say NFL.
Start preparing food for everyone.
Yes. All right. There you go. Go Get My Lunch. Wrap up. Check it out. Nick Fortier, who did an amazing job all through the draft, was updating the props in real time. GoGetMyLunch.org. That has the all-time standings. It has bio information. And the little fun thing, we now have who owes what. But the fun tab, the soundboard. We get a lot of tweets about, where do I get the drops? I don't know how you can get them from Nick's website to your hard drive or whatever you're trying to do. But if you're trying to get drops for a ringtone or whatever, at least you know that you can find some on gogetmylunch.org. Before we go, it's time to get the man on the phone. The man, the myth, the legend. He was in Philadelphia. He is a real reporter, and he successfully lobbied to have the privilege to drive from New Jersey to Pennsylvania to cover the 2017 NFL draft. And now we're going to get his perspective as a man who had boots on the ground. He is, of course, Connor Orr. What's up, bud?
What's going on, everybody?
Hey, Connor.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Where do we want to start with? Connor, how was the draft for you in Philadelphia?
It was great. You know, I always kind of avoided Philadelphia growing up in Scranton. It was kind of our little brother city, and so I always kind of thought it was sort of a stupid place to hang out, but I'll be honest, like it didn't smell like throw up like a lot of people had said, and it was clean and historical, and I thought it was great. It was like when everything was sort of set up and going crazy, it was like a Coachella for heavyset 45-year-old white people. So it was incredible. I'm not being sarcastic when I say it was one of the cooler things that I've covered. So,
and you just provided a tagline for them to use in advertising next.
Sure.
Why did it work though, in your opinion, Connor, as someone that was there? Because the explanation to me, as someone that maybe doesn't love big crowds and long lines and heat, It would sound to me like some elements in place to make it not fun, but yet everyone you talked to said that everyone was having a good time. Why do you think it was? Was it the newness of it, or was did the NFL really get something right here?
I think it was a combination of everything. I mean, the first day when I got down there, someone screamed out of their car to tell me to F off because they couldn't turn somewhere because, and they saw me wearing an NFL credential and they thought that I was in charge of blocking off the city. But once we got over that, I had like, if you started at the beginning of the NFL experience, it was like almost like a 3/4 mile walk up to the art museum. And there was enough space where you weren't like pressed up against anybody unless you really wanted to get to the front, which I think was good. You could hear from, you know, like miles back, which I think was good. And then there was like plenty of beer, plenty of water, you know, like plenty of like games and stuff like virtual reality. So like any time that someone would get like remotely bored or frustrated, I think you could turn around and have something else to do, which yep. I think was sort of the big win for them.
Did you witness any sort of fights? I mean, there's an annoying element, I would imagine, if you're not an Eagles fan, where they dominated the scene, but maybe some people that were lathered up, some punches thrown, some sharp words.
I think the funniest thing that I saw was like a group of teens, and they were all wearing the same Carson Wentz jersey, and they were like scattering from a group of adults trying to smoke cigarettes, which was like one of the funniest things like that I think I've ever seen in my life. But the only person that I saw that was like genuinely upset or afraid for one moment was like, I sort of popped out of nowhere after the first round, and I saw Colleen Wolf and Dave Damashek. I said hi, and they didn't know who I was, and they kind of thought I was this like
no.
NFL.com goober sort of coming up to them, and the look
no,
on their face
look.
Was like, oh no, like, who is this person? So,
you know, Shaq, I can see that, by the way. Shaq, I could definitely see him, and he hasn't had a lot of interaction with you, so it would make sense. But Connie Fox, she's got to do a better job if she indeed did not recognize you.
I would say it was dark, and I'm experimenting with the beard, so I'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
We should give credit. I don't think other cities would have responded like this. I mean, a big part of it is because it's Philadelphia.
Yeah.
They really do have a higher intensity and level of sports fans than just about any city. I'm not saying any city, but not every city is going to come out in those sort of numbers and provide that kind of energy. And just having been to Philadelphia a few times, like, I think it's one of the most underrated places in the country. It is a great place to spend a weekend.
I would say I definitely had the best dim sum I've ever had down there. So if that speaks to the cultural diversity and uniqueness of the city, I would say that is a definite plus. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think the Fly Eagles Fly thing got a little on everybody's nerves eventually. But, you know, at the same time, there was enough fans from everywhere where people sort of could cluster and yell their own things to each other. So I think that it was it ended up being pretty cool.
Did you say this is kind of the cliche thing to do, but you've said that you've not gone to Philadelphia a lot, I guess. Did you do the cheesesteak thing? Did you do any of the cliche like touristy things?
No. I subscribe to like the Louis C.K. theory where like, just don't tell me like when I go to that town, I got to do that thing. Like, you know, if you go to Chicago, you have to have like deep dish pizza. Like, no, I don't, you know, because I don't want it. And I didn't want cheesesteak, but I did want a warm shrimp salad with lemon verblanc. And I did have that. So
good for you. Treat yourself.
On fire.
Any final takeaways from your time in Philadelphia, Connor Orr?
I think what was cool to me was seeing everybody that like runs the circuit normally and how like cynical they've become actually look down at what was like almost 100,000 people the first night. And it looked like a Muse concert. It was just like ridiculous and actually be taken aback by it. I thought that was pretty cool because I mean, it is sort of like a commercialized like sort of event now where we're trying to create drama and do all this stuff. But at the same time, there was just a buttload of people there going crazy. So I think you got to give the NFL credit for that.
Connor, I know the four of us are about to go have a beer. The draft is over. I think that really starts the offseason in a big way. You've been off the clock for a while now. What are you drinking at the moment?
I am drinking a Lagunitas Cappuccino Stout, and I am sanding my stairs. That's what I'm doing right now.
What was that last part?
I'm sanding my stairs. I'm restoring old wooden stairs. And
oh, you're back home already.
Steely Dan. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
Which Steely Dan?
Went,
once again, yeah. Cementing your role as the manliest and most adult of the around.
Most
the
adult. Well,
by the way, when you mentioned Steely Dan, Wes woke up. Give him which album.
Any major dude will tell you?
I'm doing Countdown to Ecstasy right now.
All right.
So. That's a fitting way to close it out. Connor Orr, thank you very much for supporting us with good information about what it was like boots on the ground in Philadelphia. Carry on with your great Saturday night, buddy.
It's been a pleasure.
And with the 211th pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select
your gross Uncle Terry's laser disc copy of Speed 2 Cruise Control.
They're the best.
Football King.
What a team.
You did it again, Greg.
Always a step ahead.
We'll be back on Monday. Do we have to come back on Monday? We did like 50 shows.
We don't necessarily. So we'll see.
There's nothing more to talk about.
We'll talk about that off the air.
We'll be back September 12th.
There you go.
After the first game.
No, we'll probably be back Monday, and if not that, and if not Tuesday, for some more draft fallout and a 37-minute talk on Randy Gregory. So make sure you tune in for that. But until then, it's time to go home. Or to the bar. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, new bunny behind the glass, and new money's mommy. Good situation. Till next week.